History of the Hymns on the Mormon Channel is brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The Charity Never Faileth Choir sings Lux de Azevedo's arrangement of As Sisters in Zion. Latter-day Saint women hear the strains of this hymn, thousands and thousands of women the world around, a sense of warmth stirs within them, and a feeling of light, which bears with it a desire to live the purity and love which this remarkable hymn, both words and music, portrays. The efforts and talents of two women who were born and lived a century apart combined to create this beloved hymn, new to the 1985 hymnal. In her own words, Janice Kapp Perry tells us of her experience.
Sometime in the early 1980s, I was given the opportunity to be represented in the new hymnal the church was preparing. I was given a 3-verse text, which I was told had been written by a faithful Mormon pioneer woman, Emily Hill Woodmansey. Originally, 10 verses had been published long ago in the Women's Exponent magazine, and the music committee of the church had extracted 3 verses that were to be used as the text for a new hymn for women. I was happy to receive such an assignment and spent the next week pondering, praying, and writing a simple setting for the hymn. As I was writing the hymn, I wondered about the woman with whom I was collaborating.
Emily was the youngest of the 11 living children of Thomas and Elizabeth Hill, born near Warminster, England, March 24, 1836. Her parents were honorable people, members of the Wesleyan Church. Emily made this interesting statement concerning her family and childhood.
My parents, as well as my brothers and sisters, were very kind to me, and I can truly say that I never knew what trouble was till I became a Mormon.
Emily was introduced to the gospel of Jesus Christ when she was 12 years old and a cousin, Miriam Slade, came to visit. Miriam spoke with great eagerness and praise of a new religion, a prophet to whom God had spoken, and a land of Zion where the honest in heart could gather. Emily's parents smiled at the girl's enthusiasm, but her words stirred something deep within Emily's heart, and she was willing to walk 6 miles the following Sunday to where a meeting of the Latter-day Saints was being held. Of this experience, she wrote,
"Never, never shall I forget that day. Surely it was the turning point of my whole life. A few devoted worshippers of truth met together in a small house to bear testimony to one another and to worship God. And He was in their midst, and that to bless them. I did not even ask, "What shall I do to be saved?" The way was opened up before me, and simple and young as I was, I instinctively knew that I could not err therein.
This early testimony proved powerful enough to carry Emily through many trials, early and late in her life. Though her parents would not allow her to be baptized, the elders were permitted to visit, and on one occasion they brought with them a brother from Utah by the name of John Halliday, who bore a strong testimony of the mission of Joseph Smith, so that Emily's older sister Julia felt the Spirit bear witness to her and was converted as well. The two sisters promised one another, in the innocent dedication of their youth, that they would be true to the faith, though they were not allowed to meet often with the saints. During this time, Brother Halliday gave Emily a blessing, in which he promised her that she would write in prose and in verse, and thereby comfort the hearts of thousands. Emily and Julie were eventually baptized, but 4 years passed before the two sisters had saved enough money to come to Zion. The two girls crossed the ocean with a group headed by Brother Willie, who also was made captain of the handcart company that would take the eager immigrants to Zion. Her sister broke down under the strain of that journey, but Emily said of herself,
"I remember asking myself if it was possible for me, faith or no faith, to walk 1,200 miles further. I set down my foot that I would try, and by the blessing of God, I pulled a handcart 1,000 miles and never rode one step."
Saved with the others of her company by the providential relief efforts of the saints in Utah, Emily reached Zion, but there was to be little of peace or well-being for her there. She became a plural wife of William Willis and bore her first child after her husband had left for a mission to England. She worked 4 long, lonely years to provide for herself and her little one, only to learn that her husband never intended to return. He had abandoned his mission, the faith, and the family who depended on him. When she reached the lowest point of her faith and strength, Emily recorded,
"Weary with overwork and anxiety, pondering what to do, these words impressed me as if audibly spoken. Trust in God and thyself."
This was a turning point for her, and in 1864, 7 years after her first marriage, and at the age of 28, she was sealed to Joseph H. Woodmansey, eventually bearing him 4 sons and 4 daughters, 2 of whom died in infancy. Then Emily began to bloom, both as a creator and as a businesswoman, for when her husband suffered financial reverses, she became successful in real estate. Orson F. Whitney called her the possessor of a poetic as well as a practical mind. When Emily Woodmansey's poem, from which A Sisters in Zion was taken, was originally written, it contained 10 verses, with the 10th being a repetition of the first. The 3 selected for use in the new hymnal are the strongest and the most clear. But for the sake of interest, we shall read 4 additional verses for you here. "We'll turn from our follies, our pride and our weakness, the vain, foolish fashions of Babel despise. We'll seek for the garments of truth and of meekness, and learn to be useful and happy and wise. We'll bring up our children to be self-sustaining, to love and to do what is noble and right. When we rest from our labors, these dear ones remaining, we'll bear off the kingdom and fight the good fight. The Lord hath established the cities of Zion. The poor of His people are trusting in Him. He makes us a source for His poor to rely on. Oh, shall we not brighten the eyes that are dim? Oh, shall we not hasten to soothe the condition of the humble, the needy, the honest and pure? Oh, let us remember, whate'er our ambition, 'tis our duty, our mission, to comfort the poor. we listen to Lynn Perry Christofferson's arrangement of As Sisters in Zion.
As sisters in Zion, we'll all work together. The blessings of God on our labors we'll see. We'll build up His kingdom with earnest endeavor. We'll comfort the weary and strengthen the weak. The errand of angels is given to women, and this is a gift that as sisters we claim to do whatsoever is gentle and human, to cheer and to bless in humanity's name.
There were 8 hymns by Emily Woodmansee in the 1927 hymn book. One of these, Up, Arouse Thee, O Beautiful Zion, was retained in the later edition. The musical setting for that hymn was provided by Leroy J. Robertson, world-renowned composer, conductor, and teacher, born in Fountain Green, Utah. Up, arouse thee, O beautiful Zion, wake, awake. Hear the warder's deep cry, for the season of slumber hath ended, and the spoiler is watchful and nigh. With courage elate and heart to be great, all deadly encumbrance cast down, gird on for the fight your armor so bright, for the prize is a glorious crown. Janice Cat Perry was born in Ogden in 1938, but she spent her childhood in Oregon, returning to obtain her musical training at BYU. She and her husband Douglas are the parents of 5 children, and she has mothered several foster children as well. Their entire family life is centered around music, and it has proven a great unifying force for them. Although she has composed cantatas, 2 full-length musicals, songs for children, and songs for various occasions, counsel from her husband turned her in the direction of hymn writing.
I feel a strong impression that you should write 100 new hymns, my husband announced out of the blue as we were driving home to Provo after presenting a program in Rexburg, Idaho. I had been relaxing with my seat reclined, but I sat up quickly, incredulous at what he had just said. 100 hymns? Not possible. And who would sing them anyway? We only sing from the hymn book in church. I dismissed the idea almost completely. Almost. But 2 providential events in my life piqued my interest in hymn writing. We were preparing to leave for Israel with a BYU tour group led by Rodney Turner, who came to our house and asked if I would write music to a hymn text he had composed. 3 weeks later, we sat with our group on the Mount of Beatitudes, overlooking the Sea of Galilee, and I played my tape recording of the music, For I Will Come Unto Christ, and taught this significant and beautiful hymn to this group of friends. The second experience happened one night after a rehearsal at the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, which I was blessed to be part of for over 5 years. A friend, John Pearson, passed out copies of his latest poem, a children's hymn which I found delightful, and I set it to music. Suddenly, writing 100 hymns became more appealing to me.
Through the following years, Sister Perry studied hymn writing and composed music to many choice lyrics sent to her by colleagues and friends. She even composed music for a group of hymns based upon the Book of Mormon. On one occasion, while walking alone in the early morning around the temple grounds in Portland, Oregon, the encompassing light of inspiration came over her, and she composed text as well as music to the hymn, Thy Holy House. She was also blessed to create music to accompany the words of Elder Neil Maxwell's hymn, When the Holy Spirit Speaks, written in 1997, shortly after he had been diagnosed with leukemia. These efforts culminated in a choice experience she describes.
Toward the end of the year 2007, my 53-year-old niece, Kathy Blacker of Perry, Utah, was dying of cancer. As I visited with her, she pointed out a beautifully framed poem written by President Gordon B. Hinckley, which was hanging on the wall of her bedroom. The words of the poem comforted her, and she had written asking his permission to have it printed on her funeral program. She then asked if I would write and ask permission from President Hinckley to set the poem to music as well. I wrote to him the following week, and permission was granted. As I propped his poem on my piano, I was awed by the privilege and responsibility of what was before me. I decided to think and pray for a few days before attempting the music. Finally, in mid-December, the appropriate music came, and I sent it to the prophet for his approval. Christmas and New Year's Day passed, and I received no answer. On January 11, 2008, my niece died. 2 weeks later, on January 27th, I received the sobering news that President Hinckley himself had passed away. I realized I had not received his approval of the hymn setting. The next morning was Monday, and my son John returned from the mailbox with a letter for me from Gordon B. Hinckley, written on Friday, the prophet's last day in the office before his death on Sunday. The letter contained his approval of the hymn. A few days later, I learned that the hymn would be sung by the Tabernacle Choir at President Hinckley's funeral. As I heard the choir sing, I felt an overwhelming gratitude that my few lines of music could be part of the tributes paid to our beloved prophet that day. Now I knew the meaning of the scriptural phrase, "My joy is full."
Son of God, the Holy.
In the beginning, I could not foresee the happiness I would find in hymn writing. With our fourth published volume of inspirational new hymns for choir and home, I have written many more than the 100 hymns my husband originally suggested.
Indeed, Sister Perry's musical contribution to the kingdom has been a flowing source of hope, love, and truth. Her hymns have been heard on Music and the Spoken Word, and in many general meetings of Primary, Young Women, and Relief Society, 10 of her songs appearing in the Children's Songbook, and others in various church magazines. Many have been performed and enjoyed by ward choirs across the church. Although she has been the recipient of several awards given by her colleagues and peers, Janice Cat Perry will be loved and remembered most for the simple beauty of the music she created to blend to perfection with the words of a pioneer woman whose mortal life has long been over, but whose spirit will continue to bless, encourage, and inspire the worldwide sisterhood of Relief Society today. Emily Hill Woodmansee saw her works published in the Improvement Era, the Young Woman's Journal, and the Woman's Exponent. She wrote the Jubilee Hymn for the Sunday School and a poem for the Mormon Women's Protest of March 6, 1886, against the Edmunds Tucker Act. She served as treasurer for the Women's Cooperative Store, as well as running her real estate business. A compilation of over 500 of her poems was published privately in 1986. Emily died on October 19, 1906. The verse she wrote for a friend seems a fitting epitaph for her own life. Resting now from care and sorrow, resting from fatigue and pain, faithfully she fought life's battle. Death to such is endless gain. God hath gathered home her spirit. God hath taken what he gave. Friend and sister sweetly slumber in the quiet, peaceful grave.
I hope Emily is listening and knows that the blessing given her so long ago as a young girl in England, that she should write in prose and in verse things that would comfort the hearts of thousands, has been fulfilled many thousands of times over. And the spirit of her life and work lives in the hearts of the women of the church today.
Thank you.
History of the Hymns is a program of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.